fellows who worked along with me. Let us not forget. Perek Aleph, as we saw, was the 6 days of creation. Perek Bet was, let's open up the creation of man, and that's the story of Adam and Gan Eden. This was Sheshet Yemei Bereshit. This is the sequel of Adam and Gan Eden. It's not happening after 6 days of creation. It's during happening in the context of the 6 day of creation. And we said that that must then mean that the story in Gan Eden brings about some creation that was not yet there prior to the story of Gan Eden. And what we saw was that eating from Eitz Hadat's Tov HaRa, as destructive as it is, as a decline as it may be for the condition of mankind, at the same time, it creates for us a human being the way we know it today, which we did not have before, and that is eating from Eitz Hadat's Tov HaRa, whatever that may mean, but an internalization of Da'at Tov and Da'at Ra. We saw Da'at, let's not forget, does not mean knowledge. Da'at means to fully connect and bond to something. You can fully, ever since you eat from Eitz Hadat Tov HaRa, connect Bantu Tov, and you can also fully, at the same time, you have just as much capability to connect and to bond and to completely make yourself one with and identify with Ra. Ra, general term for anything which has to do with egocentricity and selfishness and desire and immaturity, all the dark side of the moon of man, human existence. That all takes place in the context of the 6 day of creation, and that is basically the story of creation of free will. Now that we created an Adam with a Bechira Chofshit, with free will, now he can be sent out of Gan Eden. Then, and only then, history can begin. As we said at the end of last year, once you have an Adam who makes his own choices in this world, Olam Hazeh is a place which can provide for a meaningful life. A human existence without free will, we didn't have to have to create humans. We can leave that world with animals. And of course, the meaning of that existence is close to zero, if not zero itself. And then, history can begin, as I said, in the leaving of Gan Eden. If we put into a timeline, Gan Eden, I would call it the womb of the world. Once we leave the womb, history begins. And that is, if you wish, in terms of the timeline, so this is taking place at after Shabbat, at the end of Shabbat. And of course, in all the story, we talk about it, Kubbalim develop it more, and that is the leaving of Gan Eden after Shabbat into the realms of Olam Hazeh, with having to make your own choices, with the pains of growth, etc., etc., of course, corresponds to every single week in our life, and the transition from Shabbat to Motzei Shabbat, from Shabbat into the week. Havdalah underlies all of that, the smelling of the summing underlies all of that. Don't notice, and as Tzvi Makdoshim pointed out, the only sense of the human senses that does not take part in Chet Adam HaRishon is the sense of smell. It's somehow a meta sense. It's above the other senses. We'll talk about it later on in the year more, Bezrat Hashem. But somehow the leaving of the Neshama Yetera necessitates reconnecting to it on some level, which is what the Samim is about, and that's the transition to the realms of Chol into Olam Hazeh. Or if you wish, into human creativity and free will with all the pain that goes along with it. So they completely correspond to each other. The leaving of Gan Eden into the realms of history and the leaving of Shabbat into the realms of the week. It's not just a nice comparison. That's exactly the same reality that repeats itself over and over in the context of our life. So, now, let's take everything a few very important steps forward. And in a moment, we're going to be applying it, Bezrat Hashem, in the second half of Parshat Bereshit, which you will read. But I want to develop first and to emphasize a couple points about this leading of Gan Eden. Based on what we're saying, comes out as such. In order, of course, this is one does not have to be deeper than a kid to understand that in order to allow for a world of free will, the intensity or the strength of Tov and the strength of Ra has to be completely equal in front of a person. The possibility to do good and the possibility to do bad has to be completely equal, otherwise we're not really creating a world in which you're making your own choices. That's Pashut. We just read it, the Parsha Tabchira, the ultimate application, by the way, of all this. We read this past Parsha, Parsha Nitzavim, Nitzavim Vayelech and Nitzavim. The end of Parsha Nitzavim, some of the most powerful Pesukim in Torah, if not the most. See, I'm putting in front of you today life and good
and evil and death. And it's for you to choose, and you can completely make or break your life. You can completely lead a life of life or lead a life of death. In a way that there's nothing going to be waiting for you afterwards in Olam Haba. So we're talking here to the level of every individual that makes up Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael has a guarantee to remain forever. But the individuals that make up Klal Yisrael don't have such a guarantee. And that's the intensity of choices, the intensity of free will. The origins of it are exactly over here, but again, Tov and Ra has to be completely equal to each other. Anybody know a famous pasuk in Kohelet that brings out, often quoted, this point? Now, the equality of Tov and Ra.
Please remember this pasuk, for those of you who take notes, which I recommend in general, definitely write this down. Gam et zeh, le'umat zeh, asa ha'elokim.
Very often quoted in this context, and that is that the world is formed in a way of, if you want, the positive and the negative. Thesis and the antithesis, if you want to sound a little more philosophical. The good side and the bad side. The light and the dark side of the moon, as we said before. Or in the Lashon of Mekubalim, the Sitra Achra. Anybody hear the term? Sitra Achra? Sitra Aramaic for, anybody know?
The dark side. The other side.
The other side, right. The other side. Okay. The other side. Other than the right, true, good side. Okay? And if you wish, Hu Yetzer Hara, Hu Satan, Hu Malach HaMavet, the three faces of the same power of the negative side of existence, Yetzer Hara, Satan, Malach HaMavet, all different faces of the same very being itself. And what it means is, this follows, as if we want to put it in a chart of a timeline, which we're going to be all throughout the Reshit, by the way, doing. We're going to be adding more and more pieces to the developing timeline underlying Sefer Bereshit. And that is, history begins after we come out of the womb of Gan Eden, in the Pesukim that we're just about to start reading, with a balance between Tov and Ra. I'm just presenting it as such, as representing balance between Tov and Ra. They're in a state of equilibrium. Tov and Ra. But now let's start seeing how things are progressing. And to do that, I'd like to examine a deeper level of this Etz Hada'at Tov V'ra world that we have entered the moment we leave Gan Eden. Okay? I'd like to examine another aspect of it, a deeper aspect of it. Please listen very carefully, and the implications are as lemaisa as can be for every human being who cares to grow. Let's take the following example. Let's say you're walking on Rehov Yafo near the Shuk in Machne Yehuda, and you happen to see an old lady. It's Thursday afternoon, everybody's getting ready for Shabbat. There's an old lady carrying some very heavy baskets onto the bus. And she could barely move. Something very common scene on a Thursday afternoon on Rehov Yafo near the Shuk. And you run over to her and you help her across the street with her salim and let her onto the bus, and she thanks you very much, and you go back to yeshiva and you're so proud of yourself, and you look in the mirror before you go to sleep and say, wow, I'm such a good person, I did such a good deed today, I'm great. And you go to sleep, and then in the middle of the night you wake up and you think to yourself, one second, maybe the reason I actually did it was because I happened to be spending those few hours with a girl, a friend of mine from high school. And she was there with me, and to be honest with myself, now that I'm thinking about it a little more, I very much helped that old lady in order to impress the girl. So the next Thursday, you happen to be again on Rehov Yafo, and the same old lady is walking by, and she's again with Salim, and she's trying to get onto the bus, and you run over and you help her and you go back to yeshiva and say, there was no girl with me this time. Somebody in the field already convinced me not to have a girlfriend anymore, and I don't and I go to Yafo now without a girl, and I help the old lady onto the bus without a girl next to me. This time I look into the mirror before I go to sleep. I'm proud of myself, I did it with no need to impress the girl, and go to sleep. Sure enough, 4 o'clock in the morning I wake up, and what happens now? What? Very good side. You wake up and you say, wait. I'm so impressed with myself. There's no girl. I didn't need to impress the girl. Maybe I did it because I needed to impress myself. That's a very deep point, a very significant point, a level that not often do we deal with, but a very, very true level. Tov goes by one more Thursday. You find yourself again, same old lady. You're 3 weeks older than the first time. 2 weeks, older than the first time, and no girl, and you helped her this time, you come back to yeshiva and you say to yourself, I tried as hard as possible not to do it because I wanted to impress myself, I tried to do it because she was just in so much pain, and she was sweating, and I felt bad for her. And that's when a person starts coming to realize the many different levels that there are to Tov and Ra. And what it means is as follows, and I was going on and on with this example because it brings up a very, very significant point. Et hada'at Tov Ra, describing the human existence ever since we leave Gan Eden, it's not sufficient to go into say what it means is that from now on we live in a Olam Hazeh where you make choices between good deeds and bad deeds. That is true, but that's a shallow presentation of things. It goes way deeper than that. Within every action itself, there is a built-in mixture of motivations of good and bad, or if you wish, intentions of tov and ra, embedded into every single act that we do. So it's true that sometimes you have choices where you have to choose between doing a good deed or a bad deed. Beautiful woman, not yet, not so tzinias, walks by, you have to decide yes to look, not to look. Two sides are pulling you. You're going to look. You're going after, let's say, claim, at least Torah will claim, a certain Ra side in you. And if you don't look, you're following a certain Tov side in you. Good. But it's deeper than that. There are deeper levels to the working with this Tov and Ra. Within every action itself, as the example with the old lady, you're dealing with Tov and Ra within the same very act. And then the avoda of a human being is not, doesn't end at the choice between good and bad. It's at what level of motivation are you involved in. And then the avoda is very much like the melacha that's also to do in Shabbos of Boer, of selecting. Selecting between good and bad. It means in every little thing that I do, any involvement that I have in Olam Hazeh, there is a mixture of good and bad, tov and ra motivation, and I have to make choices between which side I go after. What it brings out the human being is being, I would often compare it to the human being who's mature enough, understands that his metzias is similar to nothing else than an onion, in the sense of layers upon layers upon layers upon layers. And you can remove one level of ra in you, and what you're really doing is you're just opening up the stage for the next level of avoda, and the next aspect, the next stage of cleansing that you have not yet accomplished yesterday. So in relationship to yesterday, you're one step higher. In relationship to who you could be tomorrow, you're not yet there. And that's just levels upon levels upon levels. And that's when really, in every aspect of human growth, any meter that may be, a person who does grow experiences constant growth. It's a never-ending process until one gets to one's grave, and how much effort a person puts in, that's how many accomplishes in this lifetime. Maybe before we can just tell you a little story that I heard, it was a year and a half ago. Apparently it's a real story. A story about the Chafetz Chaim, the great Chafetz Chaim. At the turn of the previous century, he was trying to publish, he was very prolific, the Chafetz Chaim, and he was trying to put out one of his Sfarim, Sefer Mitzvot, Sefer Mitzvot Katan, besides the famous Tzmak. And he was looking for somebody who would help him publish it financially. And then one day, a Lithuanian Jew happened to come into the Chafetz Chaim and asked him for a bracha because he needs to go to the States for some medical procedure. And he wanted a bracha from the Chafetz Chaim, so the Chafetz Chaim gives him a bracha. And sure enough, the guy gets onto a boat and travels to the States. But just before he leaves the room of the Chafetz Chaim, after he gave him a bracha, the Chafetz Chaim calls him back in. He says to him, "Listen, can you please do me a favor?" So he says, "Sure." The Chafetz Chaim asks me to do the favor. We don't do the favor. He says, "Look, I'm trying to put out a certain sefer. I'm looking for somebody who would sponsor it. If you're in America, if you can find me somebody who would be willing to sponsor it, I would really appreciate it." So the fellow says, 100%, I'll try. Chafetz Chaim says, "I want you to do it, but I have three conditions. The first condition is that the person who gives the money is the only source, not taken from more than one person. The second condition is that he remains, nobody knows who he is. His name does not appear in the book. And there was a third condition, I don't remember which one it was. So, the Jew goes to the States, he stays by some wealthy Jew, he goes to his medical procedure, and he's about to leave, and then he asks this host, Chafetz Chaim is looking to publish a book, and he's looking for somebody to sponsor it, and do you know anybody who you think would be shy to ask? He tells him, give me a few hours to think about it. After a few hours, he says, you know what? I decided I want to do it. I'll be Chafetz Chaim's partner in terms of putting it out, but I have three conditions, he says. One condition is that I'm the only one who gives the money. The second condition is that nobody knows that it's me. It remains just between the two of us. And the third condition, of the Chafetz Chaim, I don't remember what it was. Toby says 100%, takes the money, goes back to Europe, gives the money to the Chafetz Chaim, Chafetz Chaim publishes the book. 30 years go by, both people in the story, both the person who went from Europe to the States and this rich American who gave the money had already made Aliyah, both live in Israel. And the son-in-law of this rich, wealthy American who'd given the money for the book meets his son-in-law, happened to be the Rav of Yerushalayim, until recently, actually. And he happened to meet, in some simcha, I think, he happened to meet the individual who came to his father-in-law from the Chafetz Chaim. And he told him, this person told this chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, whose father-in-law gave the money, do you know that your father-in-law is a partner with the Chafetz Chaim? He tells him the story. Anyway, the rabbi of Yerushalayim goes back to his father-in-law and tells him the story. His father-in-law hears that, it's the wealthy American, and says, I go back to the person and tell him, I'm not mochel him, not in Olam Hazeh, and not in Olam Habam. So this rabbi of Yerushalayim, his son-in-law, says to him, God said, like, what happened? I'm not Mochel, not on Olam Hazeh, not on Olam Haba. And after insisting, he explained to him, look, I've been a wealthy person for many, many, many years. I've given money for all kinds of causes. Every time I gave money, they made me a big Malab and Malkan, a whole big to-do. There was one time I wanted to give money to one source and to do without anybody knowing, and that was my shift to Olam Haba. But that's nobody doing it. And that's why I insisted that one of the conditions is that nobody knows who I am. And that one maisa of giving that nobody knew about, which was my share in Olam Haba, he took away from me. And I'm not mochel, I'm not in this world, I'm in the world. End of story. What it brings out is this is exactly the point that we're talking about, and that is aspects and levels of motivation involved, which we're going to be continuing to examine in Bezat Hashem. In any case, taking all that into our Sukkim, look inside, please. Perek Dalet. Pasuk Aleph. We leave Gan Eden. Please look inside. Perek Dalet, Pasuk Aleph. Adam and his wife. Adam and Chava leave Gan Eden. And we start the first Pasuk. I'm reading inside. Please follow inside with me. Perek Dalet, Pasuk Aleph. Veha Adam yada et Chava Isho. Vatahar vatelet et Kain. Vatomer kaniti ish et Hashem. What's strange, grammatically speaking, about the beginning of the Pasuk? Veha Adam yada et Chava Isho. Rashi makes reference to this. Based on Chazal. Adam yada et chava ishto.
Why does Adam remain as kind of like this abstract kind of person with a?
I'm saying not conceptual, just grammatically, purely grammatical. You're bringing up a significant point in terms of the Adam as opposed to Ha'adam. That's a very interesting thing to examine consistently all throughout the Parsha Bereishit. When do we refer to Adam as Adam, and when do we refer to him as Ha'adam? And to try to see whether there's a consistent underlying theme of difference between the two. But I'm talking grammatically right now. Yes, R.D.
It seems that both the Zahar and Batelet are referring back to the subject of Adam.
What was that?
It seems like the verbs and the sentences going back to the Ha'adam.
Meaning
he, Adam yada, and he also batahar the tailor.
No, the tahar goes back into Yishto. No. How would you think that the pasuk could be presented grammatically? How would you rephrase it in Hebrew? How would you usually the pasuk would present such a thing when the pasuk goes and says that so and so did so and so? And God spoke to Moshe. How would you apply it over here? Vayeda Adam et Chava Ishto. What's it? Ha'adam yada et Chava Ishto. Vayeda Adam et Chava Ishto. Ha'adam yada. Yada means in past tense. But that's not usually the way we present things. So based on that, Chazal, I think it's Chazal, Rashi points out that the Ha'adam Yadat Chava Yishto is not taking place here at the present Pasuk. Rather, we're making references to a past experience already described in the Pasukim. Now we're talking about the ramifications of it, that is the outcome. What's the outcome of him connecting, bonding physically with his wife? She becomes pregnant and she gives birth. But the actual relationship between them took place prior to this pasuk. Where was that? Where was there anywhere in the pasukim earlier on? Clearly, if we're talking earlier on, we're talking in the context of Gan Eden, because this is the point where we're leaving Gan Eden. Where do we have any reference to the fact that Adam and his wife had a relationship, which now, and only now, we're talking about the ramifications now that we're out of Gan Eden, that is the birth. Clearly, the conception took place in Gan Eden. So it seems, where's that? Was there anything in the Pesukim up to this point that suggests the possibility of such? Yes, Avi. Good. Look inside, please. Very good. Look inside, please. Pesukim that we've seen already. At the turn of Perek Bet into Perek Gimel. Perek Bet. Pasuk Kaf Dalet, Kaf Hei, and then going to Pasuk Aleph and Perek Gimel. Reading inside. And in fact, it seems from the context of the pasuk that that's exactly what Adam and Chava are going and doing. That they're davak v'ishto, they become one flesh. Why? So one can take it on a very pasuk level, and that is that they were just not, they didn't have clothes on, and they were not ashamed. But Chazal explained, no, that the lo yitzboshash was more than just being naked. They were involved in relating to each other, and in that state, they were not naked. And what comes about next? Who appears? The Nachash. So, now, so let's examine this. What's going on over here? Adam and his wife in the Pesukim are involved in a physical relationship between them. And all of a sudden, in the middle of our relationship, we're talking about an appearance of a Nachash that offers Chava, the woman at this point, the taste from Etz Hadat Tov v'Ra. And Ra ultimately takes over. What?
If they start, if
they're I can't hear you.
They're together.
Yeah.
And the whole thing of the Nachash happens and the apple.
By the way, the apple is a completely Christian concept.
The fruit.
Okay.
And then after that whole thing in between, then it says that kind of Nebel. And that was in between. Like that was the process of children being created. Persons created with
the sense of good and evil. Okay, you said it. Very good. Let me develop this a little. What I'm about to say is definitely based on Gemarot that suggests this. And what it may very well be is as such. It may very well be that, I spoke about this after she once with one of the boys here, and that is that instead of keeping to think in our maybe childish pictures in our mind, and I'm not saying a yes or not, but solely thinking about it in terms of some kind of a garden where an actual nachash actually comes about, the nachash as representing in the carrier of Ra, Yetzer Hara, the dark side, as we said, the Satan, the Malach HaMavet, desire, selfishness, can, in fact, be examined on an internal level, where Adam and his wife are in a context of physically relating to each other, and in the context of that, something is evoked, and that something which is evoked within them internally is this nachash, which is a more of a selfish desire side that starts being evoked, developed, makes its appearance, and somehow takes over a relationship which at first was something much pure and much more clean and much more innocent, which was expressed in the fact that the Pesukim said, V'loit boshashu, or the busha of man always comes about together with trying to cover up that side which he is not proud of or he wants to hide, problematic sides in him, difficult sides in him, or his raw sides in him, which ultimately may suggest, and I'm continuing this from what Saadia is saying, and that is that what may very well be happening in the context of a physical relationship between Adam and his wife, a nachash, which is a desire, takes over, the selfish side that appears in the world, and from that moment onwards, Tov and Ra is in fact expressed, internalized, and becomes part of the reality of man. Now, if this is true, I think Sadia may have hinted already towards that, And if we remember the following, the Gemara says in a few different places, listen to this, and this may be very non-Western, very non-scientific, but completely all over in Chazal, and that is that the motivation or the intention or the kavanah of parents at the time of conception has dramatic effect on the quality of the soul that comes into this world. The purer the intentions, the purer the possibility of the soul. And the more, the less pure the involvement, the less pure the soul that that relationship may draw and bring into this world. If that's in fact the case, what will be the ramifications of the relationship between Adam and his wife? Adam yada et chava ishto. We're claiming that every activity in the world is subjugated to better and worse motivations involved in it, or what we're calling tov and ra, that may be actually making their first appearance at this point. How would you define what would be a tov motivation in v'ha adam yadat chava ishto, and what would be a ra motivation in v'ha adam yadat chava ishto? As I said, this is the point that it's coming into existence. Okay? I'm not touching upon the question you asked me after Shir, a very significant question: how do we understand the transition from not having it to internalizing and having it? It's evoked now. Every act that we do in the world has tov and ra motivations in it. What will be a tov motivation of the act of Adam Yadav Chava Ishto? What will be a ra motivation of Adam Yadav Chava Ishto? What's your name?
Mikey Cook.
Mikey?
Yeah. What was to have children?
Ra. I hear. And Ra. What possible motivations... Somebody comes from another planet where there is no physical relationship between me and male and female, okay? He comes and looks into the world and sees a male and a female relating to each other. And you have to explain to them what they're involved in. So what would you explain? Even if you would tell them, well, Mikey's telling them, and that is, they're trying to reproduce, trying to bring children to the world. Valid. Or you can address things on a whole different level. What would you say? Yes. Name?
Edgar.
Edgar, yeah, right. They're involved in giving physical pleasure for each other. You and another planet, you don't have it, you cannot relate, but this brings them pleasure. Good. That's another level. One more level. What else can you answer? What are the husband and wife possibly expressing to each other? What? It's an outlet, they become one, but
they're love.
They're love. I think there can be three levels that you can describe a physical relationship between a husband and a wife, a man and a woman. Either they're involved in love, or they're involved in reproducing, or they're involved in and desire, and sexual desire. You will tell me that it's not so simple to go and to break this down into three different categories which are not connected from each other. I'll agree 100%. It's all intertwined. But anything that we examine, the only way to understand it is by dissecting it and then possibly putting it together. So when we do dissect, these are the three different components that can come about, and by different people, the different motivations over here at different levels, three different levels can be playing their different role. But in any case, let's put maybe the most precious of the aspects over here, and that is the ahava, the love expressed, on the side, just to simplify the discussion right now. And I'm saying to simplify because what we're touching upon now is one of the mysteries of human existence. And it's something to really go into when one is ready to get married, and that's a lot of preparation, internal preparation, as to what in fact is he getting into on this level of his future relationship with his wife. But to simplify it for now, as Mikey said, the tov would be pru revu, and ra would be, as Edgar brought up, one's desire. Of course, one will say, "What? You cannot express. You cannot even with your wife. You cannot experience a physical desire." The answer is that, on some level, yes, it has to be channeled correctly. Of course, that's what it was created for. The question is, how is it taken? What's the main motivation of a person? The main motivation is to bring pleasure to his wife. Or is he involved really more than anything else with his own selfishness? And as I said, I don't want to further go into it. Before you get married, will be the right timing for it. And yes, we're so exposed to so much dirt in this field.
like so much Western modern garbage that I think it is important already at this stage before getting married to clean a little of the concepts that we're so familiar with from Western influence. But there is definitely aspects to this pleasure, maybe more than any other physical pleasure we get in this world, that definitely are extremely selfish and very self-oriented and very egocentric. So there's Tovin Reinvav. Now, if in fact Chazal said that the motivation that you have and such a precious thing as bringing new potential of life into the world in the form of birth is going to result, your intention, your kavanah is going to result in the quality of the children that you have, what would be the effect of Tov and Ra in the actual relationship of Adam and Chava in terms of birth?
Twins.
What?
Twins.
Well, they have two children. Who would you categorize where? What? Well, we definitely present that maybe we're simplifying right now, but Cain and Hevel are the good guy and the bad guy. Possibly, it may very well be, that as a result of the relationship, there's a Cain and Hevel, two children that are born, one containing and holding on to aspects of the relationship which are more selfish-oriented, more ra, which was evoked at that point. And there's another aspect that comes out in Hevel. Now, if this is true, so what happens is, and this pattern definitely has sources to it, so what comes out of this is that whatever aspects of Ra, of selfishness that's involved in the sexual desire that was expressed between Adam and his wife, is going to manifest itself later on in the negativity of Cain, who becomes what in the world? The first murderer. The first murderer. That means that Retzach, murder, that comes from hatred and jealousy, in terms of its examining its root, its origin, may in fact go all the way back to the selfishness that's involved in desire, in Yetzer Hara. I do want in this context to point out one thing, and that is the Gemara Masechet Sukkah talks about the fact that the Yetzer Hara has seven different names. And one of the seven names, anybody who's familiar with Chazal thinking understands that these are seven different faces or aspects of Yetzer Hara. One of them is Soneh. The Gemara brings Pesukim to show it, which means that there is a hate aspect to Yetzer Hara. There's a hate aspect to Ra. In fact, often we'll find in Tanakh that when one's sexual desire doesn't get to be fulfilled, it results with hatred. What's the classic example of that in Tanakh?
Quick question here.
Who's involved in an activity trying to fulfill his sexual desire? It did not work, and it resulted with hate. Is there hate there?
Well, they do kill him and a lot of other people.
What? No. Hate on the part of he who is so. Not hate in the response of the children of Yaakov, that's definitely hate. I don't know if the word hate comes out there, but something definitely negative words that comes out. Hate on the part of he who is hoping to fulfill his desire. The story of Amnon and Tamar, right? In the family of David. He's trying to seduce his half-sister, and it doesn't work, and he ends up hating her. Not Stam, because she didn't do his wish, so therefore he hated her. That's a shallow understanding of it. Much deeper than that. Because at the core of desire itself, if it's coming from a selfish place, lies deep hate that's dressing itself up in the form of selfish desire. And when it's peeled off, it remains in its core form, and that is in hate. Another expression that we recently read in Parshat Ki Teitzeh. Remember the sequence of Parshat Ki Teitzeh, starting off with Eshet Yifat Tor, a beautiful woman that a person is infatuated in war. And the next piece, the next paragraph that's the one afterwards, but the next one is what happens if a person has two wives, one is hated and one is loved. And the next one is Ben Sor Mora. Eshet Yifat Tor, a wife that's hated, and a child which is born who is a walking evil. And that's exactly the sequence. When the motivation to relationship is infatuation, it results with ultimately with a relationship based on hate,
And the outcome of such a relationship, which is based on hate, is a kid whose whole reality is of hate. Okay, so one cannot disconnect the midah of hate of sin'ah from desire. And that's really what's, I think, underlying the coming into existence of kain. Now let's see how this continues. Look inside the psukim that I asked you to read. Don't have so much time left. Let's just go quick. We start developing the human tree. Kain kills Hevel, the bad guy kills out the good guy, and a few generations go by, and who's born, the next named individual in the parsha? Lamech. And Lamech is the first person in history to what? To be taken to court for bigamy, for two wives. First person to not go by Fer and the Rebbein of Gershon. And he has two wives, Adar and Sila. Anybody know what Chazal? Rashi brings it down to say about the fact that two wives, what are the two wives for? Why does it separate? What? He gives them two different roles, Adar and Sila.
One for children, one for pleasure.
One child for children, very good, and one for pleasure. Tzila was always in the shade, always there to give him pleasure. Tzel, provide him with pleasure. And Ada was there to reproduce. Meaning, what we found till this point, that is, one relationship that has a few different levels in it. Let's leave them actually here. Kain, Hevel, and this goes on to Lemech. Lamech goes and separates the two. And that is one for Furuhu, and one for Tashmish, for pleasure. I'm just using the terminology that Rashi brings down. In fact, going along with the lines that we were developing before, what are the children of the woman? He has actually children for both. The children that he has from Ada, the one who was there for reproduction, as opposed to the children that he has from Tzila. What are the occupations of the children of Ada? Inside, please. This is what Avi was pointing out. Notice their similarity of names. I'm talking about, please do look inside, Perek Dalet. Pasuk Yutet onwards, I'm reading the Pasuk inside. Perek Dalet, Pasuk 19. Vayikach lo lemech shtei nashim, shem echad Ada v'shem ashim Tzila. Vatelet Ada yaval. Ada, that's the one who is for reproduction, for children. And she gives birth to Yavaz. Humaya Avi, he started off, Yoshev Oil Mikne, he was the first shepherd. Yoshem Achiv Yuval, Yaval and Yuval. Humaya Avi called Tofes, Kinova Ugav. The first musician in history. The shepherd, musician, not so bad. V'shem achiv Yuval hu abi kol tefes kinov ogav. V'tzila gam hi yalda, even though she was set aside actually for pleasure, oops, there was a mistake, and she actually becomes pregnant, and she gives birth to Tuval Kain. Notice, Yaval, Yuval, Tuval. I don't know what that means. It's definitely very puzzling. There's something underlying over here in terms of this. All these three names which are similar to each other. Yaval, Yuval, and Tuval Kain. Tuval Kain, named after his great-grandfather, not surprising, why? What is his occupation?
Lotesh kol
choresh nechoshet u'belzel, Chazal point out, he invented weapons. He's responsible for the creation of metal weapons in the world. And in fact, what happens in the end? What does Tuval Kain find himself actually doing? What? He kills... he kills Cain. Tuval Cain kills Cain, right? The whole story with Lamech was blind. Tuval Cain helps him. He shoots an arrow, thinking at animals. He kills his great-grandfather he's named after. Cain, Tuval Cain goes back as a boomerang to Cain. Where Cain was the first killer, Tuval Cain ends up being the next killer, and he kills the first killer. His preoccupation is he who created the weapons. And he comes out of a relationship which was all based on motivation for Tashmish. It's hard to disregard it and say that it's a stam. That it so happened that the children which are born out of a motivation to bring more life to the world and to inhabit the world are involved in the act of bringing creativity to the world. Just a second. Music, shepherds. And the one child that's born
from a relationship which is motivation is just as the providing Lemech with his fulfilling his needs, his pleasures, what comes out of this is Tuvel Kain. And Tuvel Kain is just the boomerang back to Kain himself in the same form of murder.
What about
yes?
What's
your name?
Max.
Yes, Max.
Says that the harps and stuff was for idol worship.
Ah, so it's not so pashut. It's true. Chazal do, in different sources, Chazal will relate differently to the individuals over here. There are some sources that present things the way I have just presented. There are others who are under the underlying current, which we'll see in a moment if we still have time, that the whole course or direction of mankind is declining. So they're going to be interpreting everything negatively, and any creativity over here is going to be presented dafka from its negative side. Hence,
in Yaakov, he had Esau also. Isn't Esau?
Wait. We'll get there. A lot to discuss. We're just at the very beginning of such patterns. Absolutely. Very much still being discussed. Yeah.
What about Nama?
What about her?
One other is, like, if you're telling me that Lamech has these two sets of
I very much, I'm puzzled by it. I'm not exactly sure. According to some sources, it's Naamah, who is the wife of Noach. Lo Batuach, I have some ideas about it, maybe we can talk about it afterwards. I also want to check out more sources, because there's another Naamah, who is considered a pretty negative figure in the eyes of Chazal. I don't know yet. I'm not sure. Okay? In any case, we have to wrap up, so let's do it as follows. And that is, once you skip ahead, after the story of Lemech and Cain and Tuval and Yaval and all that, we get the Perek Hey, Pasuk Aleph, which basically takes us to the end of the Parsha. And what does it give us? How would you categorize Perek Hey, Pasuk Aleph to the end of the Parsha? The development of the generations. Over 10 generations, we're not presenting all descendants. We're developing one branch as we're going along in the family tree. This will be the timeline. We're opening up the tree of mankind, but we're interested in the 10 generations that lead from Adam to Noah, who was born at the end of the Parsha. And that's basically what we find. We'll put it a little more in a more organized way on the board tomorrow in terms of the timeline. Asarat dorot me'adam le'noach. 10 generations from Adam to Noach, and those are the 10 generations which are introduced over here. By the time 10 generations go by from Adam to Noach, started off with Cain in heaven, the bad guy killing out the good guy. By the end of the 10 generations, what happens to the balance of Tov and Ra that we started off the real world history with? How do we finish the Parsha? And the pasuk for that is, look inside please, and we'll finish with that for today. Perek Vav, the most significant pasuk maybe here, wrapping up Parsha for Reshit. Perek Vav, pasuk Hei, Vayal Hashem ki rabba ra'at ha'adam ba'aretz. This really screams out Rak Ra, as opposed to a world of somewhat of an equilibrium, balance, harmony, between equality, between Tov and Ra, over the course of 10 generations, where Cain and Hevel starting off history on a very negative note. Cain starting off history on a negative note, within 10 generations, the ramifications are Rak, Ra, Kol, Hayom, and the balance between Tov and Ra, which was supposed to start off the world on a positive, correct note of equality between the two, of Zedelez, Lelmat, Zeh, Asai, Elohim, and of free will, results with Ra taking over, and where there is no choice but to demolish and to destroy the world that we formed, which brings about many questions, some of them deep philosophical ones, and we'll deal with some of it this Hashem tomorrow.